From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 14th day of July 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in a Sapphire, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. A bit later in the program, we'll be joined by Matt Bennett, Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, to take a look at the cash grain market. And as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast with Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Along the way, we'll look at the agricultural news for the day, including the passage of the GMO labeling bill by the U.S. House of Representatives. It will now go to the president's desk and most likely be signed.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On this Thursday afternoon, futures in Chicago finished lower. July corn down 3.5 cents. December down a nickel. It finished at 364 3/4. July beans 16.5 lower at $11.11.5. November at 1062.5. We're down 43 cents. Soft red winter wheat down 4.5 on the July at 421 3/4. The hard red at 406, down a penny and 3/4. Live cattle futures were up $1.12.5 at 112.57.5 in the August. Feeders in the August up $2.50 at $141.77.5, and lean hogs in the July contract 25 cents higher at $80.42.5. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
You are the last one I get to talk to. Most of the folks won't know this yet because I haven't said anything about it. I'll be away on Friday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. I wasn't expecting to hop away when the markets crashed, at least in the soybeans. But today we're expecting you to be more right than wrong because we've got to look forward for about 4 days here of trade. What did you see in the marketplace? How did this happen today?
Well, when you're in a weather market, just about any little hint that the weather forecast may or may not change, you have a lot of people want to run out of the market. So that seems to be the case here today, is that the weather guys are indicating, or some of them are indicating, that maybe the ridge may move a little further to the west, and it may not be quite as hot, and it may not be quite as dry as what they were looking at yesterday morning. So I think that's what started the correction, and then once it started, that the way we went. And I think a lot of times when you get into a weather market, the traders have a tendency to start squaring their positions on Thursday because they want to get to the sidelines because they don't want to go through the weekend with a big position on in case the weather forecast would change dramatically on them. Nobody wants to run the risk of carrying a position that the weather forecast changes on Monday. So I think a lot of that is what we're seeing in the marketplace because the demand news remains good. Our weekly export sales were solid this morning. But it's just one of these markets that I think what's doing here is we're ripe here for a breather, and then we're going to come in Monday morning, and we'll see what kind of weather forecast we have. And corn is probably the one that probably would get hurt the most on this 5 or 7 day spell of heat, hot weather, if that turns out to be the case. We still have a lot of time on soybeans, so I think the trade kind of feels that then that's one of the reasons why the corn held together a little better than soybeans, is because there's still plenty of time for soybeans to recoup after 5 or 6 days of hot and dry weather. So that's why corn kind of held together, but again, it lost its steam to the upside. So I think it's just a consolidation phase, and we'll see what the weather brings Monday morning. And my weather forecaster is better than anybody else's. So let's see what the weather looks like on Monday morning.
Are there any interesting formations in any of the charts you watch?
Well, what I would look for, I guess, would be the beginnings of some kind of flaggish consolidation formation to develop. Maybe today was the start of it. We'll maybe see a little bit come Monday or Friday, then Monday, and we'll see then whether or not if this was just kind of a pause, and then we would shoot on higher, otherwise we'd roll down. Now, technically, the corn market kind of retraced about 38% of this decline it had there, after the rain event that we had there in late June and early July. And soybeans were able to kind of regain about 62% of that decline. And they also kind of went up to that chart gap area, and there wasn't enough muscle to push into that chart gap. So that's what kind of turned things away on us, turned things down, and that just kind of fed on us south is kind of what happened, I think. But in the short run, what I look for is maybe a period of consolidation tomorrow, and then we'll see what the weather forecast calls for when we get here Monday morning.
As we look at it today, we still have an upside week in corn. I suppose that's good news.
Yeah, technically it is. The thing that the trade is wrestling with, I mean, there's no doubt we have a crop. I mean, what I've seen is the weekly crop rating levels all indicate that we have a crop. Now the big argument is going to be, how much would hot and dry weather pull yield prospects down if we did have a period of hot and dry? And I think probably with the crop rating levels holding as well as they are, my guess is a lot of people feel the corn yield is probably up against that 170. Now, that's all subjective, but, you know, would a period of hot and dry weather, would it pull it down to 165? If it just pulls it down to 165, we still have adequate supply of corn. If it would pull it down to maybe 160, well, then we're probably talking a little different story. The other thing is, many traders really think USDA is probably overstating the demand equation on the corn balance sheet this week, and feel that the carryout is still larger than what USDA is indicating. So a lot of your fundamentalist type that are crunching numbers feel that USDA kind of went too aggressive on the demand side and feels that the carryout is probably a little larger. But we'll wait and see on that. We got to get the crop raised. But I think that's what probably gave corn a little heaviness. But now the opposite is really on soybeans, because you can see on today's weekly export sales, we're actually above USDA's projection, which is only 2 days old, and we're already above the yearly projection. So carryover is declining in soybeans, but we're still trading $11 soybeans. So if there's still room and time for the soybean crop to recoup from a period of hot and dry weather, it's still going to boil down to, I think, August weather, and we'll just have to see how that plays out. If it's dry and hot, but then we'll lose a lot of yield potentials. If we get a hurricane in the Gulf that brings moisture on up into the Midwest, well, then we got good yield prospects. So it's a weather market, and it's going to stay that way, I think, because the demand factor in both corn and soybeans is still very positive to the market. And the end users are scared that this market's going to fall back on them, and then they're going to have to go to a premium basis levels to attract any kind of farmer movement into the grain trade, and that means another year of skinny profits for the grain industry. So the grain industry is not very happy. They love big crops, they love low prices, but if you can't get a bot, they don't like that. And that's going to be one of the big concerns, I think, because if we do go lower, then the basis levels are going to be much stouter to try to encourage that movement into the pipeline.
I suppose the only thing we have left at the moment to do is to wait for the weather forecast to come out, and that happens fairly often.
Yeah, it does. The weather markets are tough to play, and farmers just have to kind of play it the way they see their crop prospects and what kind of yield potential they have, and realizing that there's still time to change, but they have to make their own individual judgment, because everybody else is a little different. You know, it all depends where you're at on the grid.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next Thursday.
Yeah, okay. Bye.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting in Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, the U.S. House of Representatives today voted with the Senate to pass the Robert Stabenow GMO labeling bill. The legislation also gives the Secretary of Agriculture the authority to develop rules for how companies may label GMO ingredients, including on-package disclosures, a simple symbol, or an electronic label. This would afford consumers the ability to know exactly what's in their food if they so choose. The passage of the bill sends it to the president's desk. Mr. Obama is expected to sign it. Well, let's stay in Washington, D.C., but turn our attention to the TPP, or the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Skepticism is growing about the likelihood of getting the TPP through Congress before Obama leaves the White House, and much of the blame is being assigned to the presidential candidates, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. But the door is still slightly ajar for a lame duck vote based on comments made earlier in the week by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and House Speaker Paul Ryan. And that has heartened trade boosters in the administration and business groups that have been pressing for the deal to be approved now. Note that TPP also has the benefit of Trade Promotion Authority working for it, allowing it to evade the filibuster's 60-vote threshold. But let's stay with trade agreements for just a moment. A free trade agreement between Canada and Ukraine was signed on Monday of this week, and it will go to a vote in the parliaments of both countries for approval. Ag Canada says the deal is expected to benefit Canada's livestock sector, among others. The signing follows a recent surge in trade between the two countries that totaled $270 million in 2015 and was 14% higher than the year before. Canadian exports totaled $210 million in 2015, and imports from Ukraine reached $67 million. Trade officials say the greatest opportunities are for beef and dairy cattle producers, sheep and goat producers, along with beef, pork, and poultry packers and processors. Global Affairs Canada also notes significant opportunities in agricultural machinery and livestock management technologies. Global Affairs staff in Canada say long-term business relationships between Ukraine and other former Soviet countries, especially Russia, have disintegrated. As a result, there may be more opportunities for Canadian companies as Ukraine's trade market diversifies, particularly in food and agriculture. And finally today, farm and agribusiness groups are planning their traditional events at the upcoming Republican and Democratic National Conventions this month. DTN, the Progressive Farmer, reports they'll have some competition from a group called Plate of the Union, which is a coalition of groups with close ties to the Environmental Working Group, or EWG. Plate of the Union plans to highlight a radically different version of American agriculture. The Great American Farm Luncheon will take place at the Republican National Convention on Wednesday, that's the 20th day of July, in Cleveland. The leaders of the American Agriculture Cocktail Reception will take place at the Democratic National Convention on Tuesday, 26th day of July, in Philadelphia. Plate of the Union will have an event at each convention location a day before the farm groups hold theirs. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Don't forget to visit our website at willag.org, willag.org. By about 5 o'clock this evening, I'll post Commodity Week. Our panelists this week include Mike Zuzlow, Bill Mayer, and Chip Nellinger. Our special guest is Rich Nelson from Allendale. We'll put that up at about 5 o'clock this afternoon at willag.org. You can listen to the program tomorrow afternoon on many of these radio stations, again Saturday morning as well. We'll air it at 2:36 tomorrow afternoon, immediately following the closing market report. On that note, I'll be out of the office on Friday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. I'll take a little time off from the radio station. However, I have some really great programming for you, and you're going to want to listen to a lot of it. Actually, I think all of it. We'll talk about the nutrient loss reduction strategy, big data in a different way that connects producers all the way to consumers. That one with a representative of PepsiCo and Cargill, a really good conversation I had last month at the CUTC. That's the Corn Utilization Technology Conference. And we'll hear from Mike Bolger as well. He is a Purdue Extension agricultural economist. Other things that are coming up over at the Ore Research Center in Western Illinois next Wednesday morning, 8 a.m., is the Agronomy Field Day for that area. That starts again at 8 o'clock. It's outside of Bayless, and there is a link and a map link as well on our website at willag.org. Look in the calendar section for the Orr Center Agronomy Field Day. That's next Wednesday morning, July the 20th, in Western Illinois at the Orr Research Center outside of Bayless. Weed scientist Aaron Hager will be there, along with agronomist Emerson Nafziger and ag economist Gary Schnittke. And then on Thursday the 28th, a week later, and a day that is, you're invited to the Ewing Agronomy Field Day. You've probably not been to this site, even if you live in Southern Illinois, Ewing south of Mount Vernon, but you've not likely been to the Ewing field plots, and you're invited there on the 28th day of July. Again, Emerson Nafziger will be there, along with a series of others, Dwayne Friend and Carl Willard, and Nathan Johanning. That's the field day. It's free, of course, open to everybody that's interested. It's in Ewing on the 28th day of July. Check out the calendar on the Will Ag website. There's a link there. It's either over on the right-hand side of the page or at the bottom of the page, depending on whether you're looking at on a desktop or a phone. So check out the calendar there at willag.org. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Matt Bennett is now here from Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt. Thanks so much. Tell me about the crops in your area.
You know, in our area, we got another 8,500 to an inch and a half rain last night. Some wind, but not quite as bad as the last event. I don't think there was a lot of corn down, maybe a little bit wind blown, but no flat corn or anything like that. I would say, from a moisture perspective, we can't do a lot of complaining right now. We feel pretty good about how things look, and I think that we've got pretty darn good yield potential on corn and beans. Of course, you know, a lot still to be determined by weather.
Speaking of which, what's your experience with weather markets?
Well, 9 times out of 10, it seems like essentially the weather market gives you a chance to market at a better level than where you were at. You know, whether or not it's going to rain, I mean, obviously that's the big question. But what we like to do, the way we like to look at it is, you know, from a producer's perspective, buying crop insurance, it's kind of crazy after a week in which, you know, beans went down about $1. It's crazy after you get another shot over $11 if you haven't gotten to the levels as far as percentage you sold that you want to be at to not look at that. So we definitely want to use this volatility to our advantage. Don't want to get overextended just in case it doesn't rain anymore, but buying a put option whenever the market's up, you know, 30, 40 cents isn't such a bad idea either.
And how about for corn? Any ideas there?
Well, a person's got to think that if we would end up getting this dome of death or whatever it is, the dome of high pressure, I mean, if it comes in like that over a large part of the corn belt, yeah, you can take 10 bushel off the national yield pretty quick. A lot of assumptions right now that we're at a 170, if the weather was perfect. So, you know, if you went down to 160, you're definitely looking at a significantly different situation. But the other way of looking at it is that if August is really hot and dry and we do catch another rain here in July, bean market could conceivably pull the corn market up to an extent. But I don't want to get too aggressive under the interim price unless I know I can make money.
Matt Bennett is with Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, joined by Mike Tenorum. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Mike, thanks for being with us. Tell me about the rainfall we've been getting, and I suppose there might be a bit more that's coming.
Well, we will see some more rain once we get into the weekend and more so early next week. What's going to happen is that the cool air that we have in place at the moment, or at least seasonable air, will depart as we get into the weekend. And as that warmer air begins to lift northward, we'll start to see a couple more waves of energy move right along that boundary. And that's why we'll see a few more thunderstorm clusters. It's hard to say exactly where each will go, but more than likely, they'll be in the central and northern Corn Belt as opposed to the central and southern Corn Belt like we saw this week. So a few more thunderstorm clusters are on the way. We're looking for generalized amounts on the low end of about half of an inch, and on the high end at around 1.5 inches over the next 5 days, with a swath or two here or there, slightly higher, more than likely somewhere from the Iowa-Minnesota border into the Chicago area. That would be kind of your highest rain risk area early next week.
Some farmers are still a bit worried about rainfall, but most are more worried about the high heat that they're expecting to come mid to late next week and then into the following week. Do we have any more information on it today?
Well, we do have a little bit more, and it definitely is a slightly worrisome situation when you just look at the magnitude of the heat that's coming. We can see that an upper level high will grow to what can easily be described as an enormous level by the time we get into this day next week. So about 5, 6, 7 days from now, we'll be looking at this enormous upper level high across the central U.S. We know that once this happens, things will start to dry out and it will turn hot and very hot. High temperatures approaching 110 degrees are not out of the question in and near parts of Nebraska. That just gives you an idea of how intense this air mass will be. Now, with time, we'll start to see the heat expand a little bit as we move into the latter half of next week and into next weekend. By that point, high temperatures should be in the 90s and 100s across a big part of the central U.S., with low temperatures only in the 70s and 80s. Now, as long as we mentioned all this, we should at least mention a couple more things. There always will be a risk for a thunderstorm cluster to develop and disrupt the entire pattern. We did see something like that happen about a month ago, but just based on everything that we're seeing, that doesn't look like the most probable scenario once we get into next week, and that's primarily because the size of the upper level high is just so big, and the depth of the heat that's associated with it is so deep that should suppress thunderstorm development for a lot of different people. And so for that reason, we think that that's the more likely scenario, turning increasingly hot and drier with time. But keep in mind, again, we do have thunderstorms in front of this setup.
This is a transition to a midsummer climate for the Midwest?
Well, this is definitely at the upper end of what's even possible in the central United States. So don't think it's just an average run-of-the-mill warm-up. This is a major and intense heat wave that's coming. It's just not certain how long it's going to last. We think it'll last at least 5 days in the Corn Belt and at least 7 days in the Plains. Whether or not it lasts longer than that is a big question. And keep in mind, that's about 2 weeks from now. We're forecasting at that point. Forecasting 2 weeks out always leaves you subject to big errors. And because of that, we just don't want to talk a lot about what might happen or how long it might last, except to say that it's going to be hot later next week, and it's just a matter of watching it at that point.
Mike, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd. Have a good one.
You too. Mike Tenores with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report.